what's on first. I want to know what the pitch is.
What's on second?
I don't know.
Third base.
You got a catcher?
Surely.
The catcher's name.
Today.
Today, and tomorrow's pitching.
Now you've got it.
Now I've got it. I don't even... Look, all we got is a couple of days on it.
I can't help that.
A couple of days.
Don't get excited, though.
Who's the next side?
Take it easy. Take it easy.
You know, I'm a pretty good catcher myself.
Well, tell me.
Now, I'll catch today myself.
All
I'm
right.
Catch. Yes. And tomorrow's pitching on a team.
Yes.
Now, tomorrow...
You're listening to WNJC 1360 AM in Washington Township, New Jersey. Also on the web at WNJC1360.com or Forsyth Broadcasting Company.
This is the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360, Progressive Liberal Talk Radio. The news you need to know that you don't get anywhere else.
And welcome to another night with the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show. And tonight is an interesting night. I'm going to talk about some experiences I've had locally. Ends up, I needed to hire some people this week to do some work, short-term work. And so I did what I've done in the past, and I went to the local supermarket, and I put up a notice on the bulletin board. And it was cool. And so I thought, well, I can do better than this. I wrote the first one out, and my handwriting is, let's say, prehistoric or, you know, cryptic. Not very good. I used to get notes sent home about my handwriting when I was in first grade. But I wrote it, and so I decided to get organized. So I did it on the computer, and I printed out a whole bunch of them, and I printed out a whole bunch of little tabs with the phone number and the internet, the email address. I felt so good about myself being so organized about this. And then I figured I'd tape it onto the cards that they provide at the supermarket for their community bulletin boards. And so I went to the local Acme. And they didn't have a bulletin board. They got rid of it. I went to the local Giant. They didn't have a local bulletin board. I went to the local Superfresh, the local Gennardi's. None of them had community bulletin boards. Now, these are hard times. These are times when communities need to pull together. And where communities need to provide community. How do you do that? How does that work? It's little pieces like community bulletin boards in grocery stores that are the glue that helped to hold communities together. Now, I was putting out job offerings. We've got 5 million unemployed, and you know, I got one person so far. She's got a full-time job. She's struggling. She's really trying to make extra money, and you know, she worked really hard today and did a great job. I got another call from somebody trying to figure out if he could get a bus to where I am. I'm not sure. I told him where to look, and he'll check it out. But I couldn't put up all the signs that I created because all those grocery stores don't do it anymore. Now, why wouldn't they do it anymore? Why wouldn't grocery stores have community bulletin boards anymore? I have to think that somebody figured out that a manager has to take the old cards off. Or somebody. Somebody's got to spend time. If they do it once a week, then once a week for 10 minutes, somebody has to pull off gold cards. Multiply that times 52, you've got 520 minutes. That is a little over 8 hours of, 8 hours and 40 minutes of work. Say you're paying that person the princely sum of $10 an hour for working at the grocery store. That's $87 multiply that times 100 stores, that's $8,700. So, Gennardi's, Acme, Superfresh, Giant, they all got rid of those community bulletin boards for about less than $10,000 for not one community, but hundreds, maybe thousands of communities. The one store that did keep it is Redner's, which is not as nearly as big. I say, go to your store and go to the manager and say, we want our community bulletin board back. Even if you've never used it, there are people who need it. There are people who are trying to sell something so they can pay their mortgage. There are people who are trying to find jobs. We need to bring back all the community that we can in this country now, because things are tough. So we're looking, we're watching as Obama's appointees are basically protecting the big banks, the big bankers, the big investment houses, the finance companies. We've been sold out. Obama told us he was going to take a bottom-up approach to the economy, and he hasn't done it. He's got Larry Summers, Tim Geithner, and they're doing things the same old way that they always did. I don't think they can do it any other way. That's all they know. We need new blood, new people, people who can really get it, people who understand just what's going on in this world, who understand that the capitalism model that has been sold as the be-all, end-all doesn't work anymore. Doesn't work. Globalism doesn't work. What it does is it destroys the strong nations, strong industries. We don't need it anymore. We should never have had it. Bill Clinton sold us out when he signed the World Trade Organization and NAFTA. Of course, George Bush did it. Of course, George Bush gave us more of the same. We need what really amounts to a revolution in a lot of different ways. We need a revolution because what has happened to the United States in the last couple of years, in the last two presidencies, Clinton and Bush, is America was sold down the river. Now, Rob Cole Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360, is sponsored by opednews.com, opednews.com. And opednews.com is a news and opinion website for liberals and progressives. And frankly, the Clintons are not really very beloved there. We have an awful lot of people who are not even very thrilled with Obama, but certainly not with Clinton and Bush. George Bush. George Bush is gone finally. I wonder if the country will ever, ever recover from the worst president in the history of the world. And then we have Dick Cheney. It's funny how even the Republicans are repudiating him now. It's time that America repudiate a lot more than Bush and Cheney. It's time that America goes on a new path. We have smart people in America. We have visionaries who really get what the future is all about. And the future is not about big companies getting bigger. The future is not about health insurance companies that make huge profits and that pay their CEOs hundreds of millions of dollars, if not $1 billion or more. No, that is not what America is about. That is not what the founders of this country fought for. What is America about? America, the land of the free, the home of the brave. Where do the corporations fit into that? Where do these rip-off corporations that pollute the air, that change the system so that a very tiny few get treated specially? Now, that's what the founders fought against. That's what they died to become free of. And who is it that gives the power to these corporations? Who is it? Did you vote for somebody who then casts votes that give extra power, that gives breaks, that gives protections, that sets regulations that make it easier for corporations to get away with stuff? Did you? You know, and I'm not talking about, well, I'm a liberal and I'm progressive. I'm not just talking about Republicans, because there are plenty of Democrats who are sellouts. A lot of them are blue dog Democrats. They say they're fiscally responsible. That means they take a lot of money from big corporations, and then they cut deals and create legislation that protects them or gives them breaks or gives them the farm. Gives them the farm. Now, we're doing a lot at opednews.com now on farming and food. Matter of fact, the work that we're doing has hit Congress. It's given them headaches. It's made national news with newspapers covering the story. And it's gotten the attention of one of the companies that is among the most hated in the world, Monsanto. Now, why would a company be hated? Now, what are some of the other companies you think of when you think of companies that are despised around the world? Well, there's Exxon, you know, the Exxon Valdez that ruined the lives of small villages all throughout Alaska. Ruined them, just destroyed the families. They lost, they couldn't work because the natural resources were wiped out. There's Enron, of course. How many people lost all their savings because of Enron? Then there's Dow Chemical. My peace friends, they look to the military-industrial complex at some of the manufacturers of the weapon systems. Then there's Monsanto. Monsanto makes GMO, genetically modified organisms. They'll make corn that is resistant to Roundup, you know, that poison that you kill weeds with. So then you can spray the Roundup and the corn does okay. Now the problem is plants send out pollen. And pollen fertilizes other plants. And if there's an arbitrary border between one field and another, from one farm to the other, pollen doesn't pay attention to it. You can't say to pollen, don't cross the border. So what's happened is that farmers who plant ordinary corn, if they have a farm next to a farm planted with Monsanto seed corn, they could be at risk of having some of their corn fertilized. And that can cause problems. Monsanto doesn't like that. Monsanto claims to own the rights to that pollen, to the genes within it. the month, Santa tends to go after farmers. But, you know, isn't that crazy? Isn't that outrageous and ridiculous? Fortunately, there've been some lawsuits, and farmers have fared fairly well with it. Now, how does a big mega-billion-dollar multinational company deal with things like that? It hands out money left and right to legislators, and it asks the legislators to pass bills that have vaguely worded laws within them that change the rules to make it better for this big mega-billion multinational company. Now, when they do that kind of thing, do you think they put their name in the bill? No. Do you think they want to make it obvious? No. If somebody calls the legislator on it and says, this bill's no good, this is going to cause problems, this could hurt small farmers, this could hurt organic farmers, this could hurt farmers' markets, do you think they might even say, look at that person, that person's crazy, we're not associated with this bill, our name isn't in there, we're not asking specifically to do this, this, or this. Now, the bill is maybe 80, 90, 100 pages long. How many people do you think read those bills? Do you think the congressman person actually reads them? Oh, sure, some aide read it. Some aide probably took words directly from one of those big corporations, or maybe a couple of them. Maybe it's not just Monsanto. Maybe it's Archer Daniels, Midland, or who knows what other company is looking to lock out small operators, lock out international companies, make it harder for other companies to work. So they play around. They give this verbiage that looks benign, but that really has some nasty clout to it. Maybe they get a bunch of sponsors to endorse it, and then they work with the original writer of the bill, really not with the writer, not with the member of Congress, just with one of the aides. Maybe they wine and dine that aide. Maybe they take that aide on a trip. Maybe they offer the aide a job. That aide, who's not really making that much, it's got a fun badge saying they work for Congress, maybe making $40,000, $50,000 a year if they're lucky. And they say, you know, you get this in, and you'll have a job with us making six figures. You think that's really a big stretch? You think that's something that is hard to imagine? You think that's something that doesn't happen every effing day? This is Rob Call, Bottom Up Radio, WNJC 1360. We're talking about evil corporations. We're talking about legislation that is sticking it to the American people. Now, there are a lot of farms down in South Jersey. If you're not a big monster farm, how much regulation do you want? How many piles of paper do you want to fill in? Because that's what you're going to get with H.R. 8, is it 875 or 825? I think it's 875. H.R. 875. Now, we're broadcasting to people listening who in New Jersey have Rob Andrews as a member of Congress. Get on the phone. Tell him that he's got to really watch out for this legislation. Now, the funny thing is, a couple weeks ago I went to a whistleblower conference. A couple weeks ago I had some whistleblowers on, Colleen Rowley, for one, and a former, actually he's not a whistleblower, but he's now calling out the government, Ray McGovern. The thing with whistleblowers is they're truth tellers. There are people who see something wrong and they go to their boss and the boss says, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it, and does nothing. They go to his boss or her boss and tell the story and nothing gets done. And they keep going, looking to try to get things fixed, because sometimes those things could kill people. Sometimes those things are huge rip-offs of the government. And on the other side, they're dealing with their bosses. They're dealing with the government. They're dealing with a big company. And their antagonists on the other side want to shut them up. They want to keep them silenced, and they want to make sure that they're not listened to. So how do you do that? You make people look like they're not believable. You make them look like they're crazy, like they're fools, like they're liars, like they're thieves, like they're unreliable, they're unstable. And to help make this possible, they mess them up. They mess with their lives. They mess with their finances. They take away their jobs. They take away their dignity. They try to destroy people. That's what's happening with this bill. And what's interesting is a lot of the liberals in the progressive community are being suckered by this. Now, on opednews.com, that's opednews.com, we've published over 100 articles covering what's happening with the threat to not just the nations, but the world's food supply by corporations that are trying to dominate and control all the farms and all the food. If you've got that, you've stepped on the digestive tract of people. If you've got the food supply under your control, you can do anything. Just imagine genetically modified food controlled by a corporation that may even have some kind of chemical or a key that shuts it down if people don't cooperate. You know the cost is incredibly higher. People are already starving. So look out. We've seen it happen on rawstory.com, on crooksandliars.com. People have literally helped Monsanto and these other big agribusiness companies by basically supporting their message. Remember Star Wars? That scene when Luke and Obi-Wan Kenobi leave the dehydrator unit farm, go to the big city on the little planet, and they encounter some starship troopers, and Obi-Wan Kenobi waves his hands and hypnotizes them and says, there's no problem, nothing going on here, everything's fine. That's what they're doing. That's what they're saying. But it's not. It's not fine. America is in danger, and these big corporations, these same corporations who, through their experiments, their wild gambling, it cost you half of your life savings, for most of you. Those corporations that have forced you to no longer consider retiring at the age you had planned on, those corporations are now working, messing with the food supply. And believe me, if they can get away with it, they will. And you're going to start, instead of paying 6 or 10%, 8% or whatever the small number is of your income for food, it's going to go up to 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 or 20%. And all of a sudden, that apple that you can buy now for 30 cents is going to cost $3. That can of corn is going to cost not 89 cents or 49 cents like it is now. It's going to cost $4. from loaf of bread with genetically modified wheat, $8. Your income's not going to go up. Unless you've invested in these killer companies. Now, I say killer. Why do I say killer? Because farmers are committing suicide because they can't deal with the problems that are being created when they face this aggravation. People are starving, and rather than creating food that works, that is cost-effective, and that it can be grown and feed a lot of people, food's getting really expensive. We've got to do something about it. No doubt about it. And what we got to do is fight the legislation and tell the members of Congress. H.R. 875 is a bad bill, and there are a bunch of other bad bills floating around. You know, what they do is they'll come up with a handful of bills, and one has no chance of ever passing, and then others, if the first one doesn't, they're compromises, but they still get the key points that they've been looking for. And that's how they do it. So, do you know who your member of Congress is? If you don't, well, shame on you. But you can fix it. It's really easy. Go to your library. Call the local government office. Go online and do a Google search for congressman for your zip code. I mean, it's not hard to find out who your member of Congress is, and you should not only find out who your member of Congress is, you should go to your member of Congress's office and get to know some of the people who work there. Each member of Congress has about 25 employees. Some of them are in Washington, and some of them are usually in a couple of congressional local offices spread around the district. Get to know who yours is. And you'll be amazed that those offices can help you in different ways. Go to the office, introduce yourself, and say, hey, I just want to find out what you do. I want to find out what resources you offer and how you can help me. And there are ways that they can and will help you. That's their job, and they're happy to do it. And then maybe you can start paying attention to what's going on in Congress. There's legislation that's going to affect your life, your family's life, your job, your savings, if you haven't noticed already. Decisions or the failure to make decisions have affected you. They listen to you. Members of Congress listen to you. Believe it or not, when you call, they write it down, and they pay attention. And it's just a tiny fraction of people who call. If a congressman has 600,000 people in his district, there might be 1,000 people who call. You know, it's 1 out of 600. So if you call, your call makes a big difference. So get on it. Do it. This is Rob Call, Bottom Up Radio, WNJC 1360. AM. And, you know, bottom up. What is bottom up all about? You know, there are so many areas of the world that are top down. Bosses, some kinds of religion, jobs, a lot of jobs are that way. But the world is changing. The kids, if you're under 30, Your brain is bottom up. If you're over 30, your brain is top down. If you're over 30, then you need to understand what bottom up is all about. Bottom up brains are marinated in the internet. Bottom up brains are the future. Every year, people who are working who are running companies, who are making loans. More and more of them are bottom-up people looking at the world from a bottom-up way. Bottom-up is kind of like a sharing, cooperation, participation. If you look at the internet, some of the biggest companies in the world are bottom-up. And if you can understand how bottom-up works, it can come to your advantage in terms of your job, your projects, your relationships, even your spirituality. For example, Google. When you do a Google search and you type in some word or phrase, something comes up at the top. Now, Google keeps its search algorithms pretty secret, but it's basically a bottom-up system. Google looks at where people go who search for a term, and they look to see which sites have the most links based on that term. And that's the one that gets number one. So people, the users of the internet, decide how Google ranks people. Isn't that an interesting concept? Just imagine if we had that with our government, where you would actually be able to vote on stuff. Hello?
Hi, this is Brady.
Brady, all right, I've been ranting away here, and I was talking about bottom-up. So, Brady. Brady is one of the senior editors for Op-Ed News, a central core part of the team who just makes Op-Ed News so much better than it would could ever possibly be without her.
Thanks, Rob.
Oh, thank
I love
you.
It. I love news.
Well, we love you, too, because you're doing such a good job. I was looking at the front page today, and boy, it was awesome. It looked fabulous.
So have you heard from Kelly yet, from the Advocate?
No, I haven't. What's up?
Okay, she is the political editor for the magazine, The Advocate. Let me turn down my computer.
Oh, you got a lot of noise back there.
No, I haven't. What's up?
Can you go somewhere where you don't have that noise?
Sorry. Okay, I just wanted to get her right, her last name correct. Ellevelt, Carrie Ellevelt from The Advocate. She's the political editor, and she can give us some good information on what's been happening with Vermont and Iowa and the same-sex marriage movement across the nation.
Well, did you give her the phone number to call in?
I did.
Good. Well, let's hope we hear from her.
Yeah. In the meantime, it's all very exciting. We're at Vermont. What was interesting about Vermont was that this is the first state to legislate same-sex marriage as opposed to being court-ordered. I mean, the three other states, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Iowa, these were court decisions upholding equal protection under the Constitution. But Vermont went one step further, and the legislature said, no, this is the way it's got to be, and even had enough votes to override the veto by Governor, I have to get my article in front of me, the Governor.
Hello, Carrie Ellefeld.
Oh, hi, this is Rob Cole, Bottom Up Radio. We have Brady and Ando on the show, and I had invited Brady to talk about the news that has been developing in Vermont and Iowa, and I'm glad she invited you to get on.
Great.
So, Brady was saying about how the governor in Vermont had vetoed the bill. What was the bill exactly?
Well, the bill is essentially to legalize same-sex marriages so that same-sex couples can be married legally in Vermont. And, of course, Vermont back in 2000 was the first state in the country to allow civil unions. But this is interesting because it's the first state to legislatively vote to allow same-sex marriages. And it's the first state in the nation to do that. Every other state that has allowed same-sex marriages, from Massachusetts to Connecticut to California for a short period, and to Iowa then, just recently, has, of course, decided to, it's been a prompting, at the prompting of the courts. The courts have said gays and lesbians, same-sex couples deserve equal protection under the law and must absolutely be afforded the right to marry. And they have either just ruled that and legalized it, or sometimes, in certain cases, they have sent something back to the state legislature and said, you must find a remedy for this inequality.
Now, from what I understand, in Iowa, this decision if there's an attempt by legislation to overturn it, it will probably take years to happen.
Yeah, you're exactly right about that. I mean, everybody who's looked at this has said there's almost no chance that it could happen before 2012. And, of course, the longer it goes along, the slimmer the chances are that they build, that the opposition sort of builds the momentum for that. But the reason being is that in order to put something up like this in Iowa, it has to pass through the legislature in two consecutive separate sessions. And so that means the legislature, before it could be, before any changes could be made, would have to actually vote to either put this up for referenda or have a vote I think they would have to put it to the voters, to be honest. But anyway, before that could happen, they would have to put it through two separate consecutive sessions, like I said, legislative sessions. And there doesn't seem to be any will to do this. Immediately following the decision there, of course, the Senate Majority Leader and the House Speaker, both Democrats, issued a joint statement that read incredibly positively about this decision and the fact that and then later reporters called the House Majority Leader the House Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader, and I think it was the Senate Majority Leader who said, "Look, I'm not going to put this up. I'm not going to try to overturn this, and I'm not going to allow a vote on this right now." So there doesn't seem to be not only would it be a long process, but there doesn't seem to be the will among the Democratic legislators there in order to make it happen.
So this is a big deal that's happened in two states now. Vermont has always been a pretty liberal state. It elected a socialist to the Senate, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
My favorite senator.
Uh-huh.
I agree.
But Iowa is like, that's mainstream America.
It is mainstream America. I mean, it is, as I've been saying today, and I talked to, to a couple different outlets, I said, really, when you look at Iowa, being the first in the Midwest, it has given mainstream cred to the idea of supporting same-sex marriage. And I really think that's true. I mean, I have a personal bias because I come from the Midwest of the country. I was originally born and raised in Michigan. So there's a little piece of my heart that still lives and breathes Midwestern sensibilities. And I do think there's something significant about this not being the province of the coasts anymore. We're not just talking about the Northeast, and we're not just talking about those loony Californians, and I say that lovingly because I lived in San Francisco for 5 years as well. But the left coast, as they call it, now we're talking about the heartland.
That's right. It's very significant.
So what does it mean for the rest of the nation? I mean, I did not think about Proposition 8, but, I mean, that sounds like...
Yeah. Well, so, if I'm dominating the conversation, please feel free to jump in.
You're doing great. Rady invited you.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rady. Rady put her faith and trust in me. We chatted just before I got on the phone, and then she proceeded to tell me all these things I didn't know. She was more informed on all the subjects than I was. So anyway.
Rady is a senior editor at opednews.com. Are you familiar with opednews.com?
I have heard of opednews.com, but I must admit that I haven't frequented, but I certainly know of it, yes. I think this is the most, to me, always the most interesting question is, what does it mean moving forward, right? And, you brought up the issue of California. Rady and I were discussing this, and she said, well, look, my understanding is that the justices there have already decided, and it is true that oftentimes even before oral arguments, people who are much more familiar with the legal system than I am will say that justices decide before the oral arguments, and then they oftentimes ask questions and use the oral arguments as a way to shape and hone their decisions and their rulings. But in this situation, and, you know, it's hard to know. I don't know. LGBT activists out in California right now supporting same-sex marriage, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender activists supporting same-sex marriage, have little idea what's going to happen with the California court decision. I've seen it played both ways. Some people say, boy, you know, justices were really hard on the people who were arguing for same-sex marriage during the oral arguments, and so this could be a bad sign. Some people say, well, they could have just been using that as a way to sort of hone their arguments for their ruling. No, the truth is that no one really knows. But I would say that there's an amazing significance about having Iowa happen and then within a week, not just having the legislature vote, because the legislature in Vermont voted to pass this, but then it got vetoed by Jim Douglas, right, Governor Jim Douglas. And then they went ahead and got and garnered 2/3 of the vote in order to override that veto. I mean, that was amazing. It's amazing. And most people, look, I was watching the chatter. I mean, I'm actually a Washington correspondent, so I am more focused on what's happening on Capitol Hill and what's happening with President Obama and his team. But I was watching the chatter all over the blogs, and when the first vote came down, everybody said, oh my gosh, you know, overwhelming support for marriage, but we're 5 votes short in the House to override the veto, and that's going to be a tough climb. And people seem to be, I wouldn't say reconciled at all, but very worried about being able to pick up the 5 votes in order to override the veto. Well, then the Iowa court decision comes down, and before you know it, we're in a situation where we're talking about overriding. I mean, that moved quicker than anybody, I think, thought it ever could.
What are they saying in Washington about this?
Well, it depends on who they are. Do you mean what's coming out of the White House?
Anybody.
Well, the White House has been fairly tight-lipped, they did send out a response. I requested a response to the Iowa ruling. And they did send out a response to the Iowa ruling, and it was tepid at best. I'm happy to read it. I have it right here. It's short. You want me to read it?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. And this is on our website too, so you can I have a piece on our website today about this. But anyway, the president respects the decision of the Iowa Supreme Court and continues to believe that states should make their own decisions when it comes to the issue of marriage. Although President Obama supports civil unions rather than same-sex marriage, he believes that committed gay and lesbian couples should receive equal rights under the law. Now, that is a very, to say we respect the decision of the Supreme Court and then remind people that he supports civil unions rather than same-sex marriage, but believes that gays and lesbians, deserve equal rights under the law is a very, very tepid response. Given the excitement of the Iowa ruling, it was what I call the buzzkill.
So who do you think wrote it?
Well, that's a good question. I have a whole piece on this on our site, and I will. I normally don't plug our site, but I will say if anybody wants to go to advocate, you know, www.advocate.com. There's a piece up in the slideshow there. You'll see this little slideshow that goes back and forth, and it's called the White House Office of Missed Opportunity. Now, I rarely editorialize. I only
it's
do it.
It's becoming the biggest piece of real estate in Washington, I think.
Right. There you go. There you go. I don't editorialize that often, but I felt like the manner in which this statement came out, I mean, they didn't send the statement to the entire press corps. Usually I'm on the press list for the White House press corps, right? And they send out statements on everything. It's, you know, they send a mass statement out on anything that happens from passing away of a major player in some particular arena to statement on the North Korea launching a rocket, right? So, and everybody in the press corps gets it. Well, they didn't send this out to the mass press corps, this statement. They only sent it to the specific people who requested it. And to my knowledge, I don't know who else requested it because I haven't seen it anywhere else. So in any case, they sent the statement out, and I just thought, boy, it's such a tepid statement. Given what the Democratic leaders of the Iowa state legislature there sent out, it was such a contrast. Seems like they could have found a way, someone who had sort of inspired vision of what was happening here and what Iowa meant, they could have found a way to send out a response that didn't necessarily deny that, go so far as to say President Obama supports marriage equality. They were never going to do that. That was never going to happen. But couldn't they have found a way to be slightly more affirming in their language? And so, anyway, that's what my piece is about. I do think it's interesting, and I would like to note that when President Obama left the country last week, there were two states that you could legally marry in. And when he came back to the country, there was a 100% increase in that number.
Right. And what about, let's remember, this whole concept of separate but equal doesn't fly. So that the statement by the White House contradicts itself to say that that he supports equal rights for gays and lesbians, but civil unions, not marriage. I mean, we've already known, practiced separate but equal. It doesn't work.
It's a very, very valid comment, and many, many activists, gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender activists have noted what irony there is in our first African American president backing a concept that sort of smacks of the whole separate but equal syndrome, which of course is by definition unequal.
Exactly.
So. Have I fulfilled your? Is there anything else you want to ask me about before I get off the phone here?
Well, are there any other states in the horizon?
Oh yeah, that's a very good question. You know, there's a few things going on, and I'll highlight a couple things. First of all, New Hampshire, there's a marriage bill in New Hampshire. New Hampshire already has civil unions, right? And there's a same-sex marriage bill in New Hampshire that's in process right now. And there is this state Senate race. It's a special election that's coming up towards the end of this month. I want to say it's April 21st, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, coming up towards the end of this month, between two legislators, one of them's name is Bud Martin, and the other one's name is Jeb Bradley. And they are duking it out for the state Senate seat, and people are sort of watching that and saying, well, if the Republican wins this, it might slow down the momentum because politicians are sort of watching it as sort of a gauge or a barometer of the electorate. It might slow down the momentum on that same-sex marriage bill. Don't get me wrong. That marriage bill is going to happen eventually. But, you know, it's a question of is it going to happen this year? But if the Democrat wins, people feel pretty good, pretty positive about the fact that New Hampshire will end up potentially being the next state to have same-sex marriage, and probably will get it done by 2010. And then there's Maine, and Maine is starting out its process. It's a little behind where New Hampshire is, but they're having a very big hearing on this toward the end of the month, and they expect hundreds of people to be there. In fact, they expect close, you know, 1,000 or more people to be there for this hearing to weigh in. And they're going to be debating this legislature is going to be talking about and having a hearing on both a gay marriage bill and a civil unions bill. And then the other two states to keep an eye on are New York and New Jersey. They've been sort of pounding down this path for a while
now. I couldn't hear the first one.
New York and New Jersey. They've been pounding down this path for a while. They both have governors who have pledged to sign the legislation if it hits their desk. And it was interesting, as soon as, when Iowa happened, you know, I saw some releases, because I used to live in New York. I just moved to D.C. a month ago. Saw some releases from the Empire State Pride Agenda, which is the equality organization, the LGBT equality organization there, saying, oh, it's great this has happened in Iowa. Let's make it happen in New York. Well, then by the time Vermont happened, another communique came out from the Empire State Pride Agenda, and it literally, the subject line was, I'm embarrassed for New York. And that was the subject line from the executive director of the Empire State Pride Agenda. And he was basically, I mean, that was a sentiment among many, many activists in those two states, that they were embarrassed that Vermont had been able to make this happen before these two states that have been, you know, flirting with it for a while. So,
little healthy competition, good for the cause.
Yeah, exactly. Healthy competition. I think that's semi-sour grapes.
Well, anyway. Patterson for us. Governor Patterson's been good. Wasn't it last summer sometime they agreed to recognize marriage from any other jurisdiction?
Yeah. And Governor Patterson, you're exactly right about, he agreed to recognize marriage from any other jurisdiction. And the other thing is that he's been on record for marriage, I think, since 1996, for marriage equality since 1996. I mean, that was way before this was even a controversial stance to have, because no one had even considered it. I mean, talk about being ahead of the curve. I've interviewed him a couple times, and I have never met any politician I thought that was more genuinely pro-gay, so unconcerned with someone's sexuality, couldn't figure out why this would matter to anybody, you know, in terms of it from a discriminatory standpoint. So he's a real ally in New York, and I think, you know, would do whatever he could within reason in order to make that happen. So,
yes.
Anyway.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Absolutely. Thank you. I had a long day, but, you know, you get me talking, and there it is.
And Terry, you have to check out Op-Ed News. I mean, do a search and plug in a couple of the keywords you're interested in, and you're going to find a lot of good stuff.
Will do. I will do.
All right.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much. Yes.
Yep. You guys have a good night.
You too, Carrie.
Bye now.
That's theadvocate.com, and also want to thank Mark, who connected us with Carrie from The Advocate. All right, Rob. It's very exciting. What's happening on the LGBT front is very exciting. Now we just got to get them to add the I to the acronym.
What is I?
The intersexed folks. The United
what is
Nations.
That?
There are people born with both or some kind of combination, you know, on the bell curve. Some people have penises, some people have vaginas, and then there's sometimes the in-betweeners. And in the United States, it's common practice to surgically alter those people when they're children, babies. And so there's an underground movement to stop that practice here and let people decide when they reach
adolescents after their hormones kick in, let them decide how their body should be surgically altered, if at all.
How common, how prevalent is that?
I don't honestly know, Rob. I'm thinking...
All right, Rady, come on. Let's get to work here.
Yeah, but the United Nations recognizes it. That's what's so exciting. When, you know, in December of 08, the 67 countries as member states of the United Nations agreed to a statement asking for the decriminalization of homosexuality and of lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transgendered, and intersex people. They included all five in the civil rights battle for sexual minorities. And so I'm just hoping the United States catches up and adds that I onto the end of the...
Tell me something, Rady. Why should somebody who is not gay care about this?
Now I have to get philosophical.
Yeah.
Well, as an issue of appreciating diversity, number one, I mean, there's all kinds of theories out there about why there would be a portion of any population, or at least 400 species now have been documented, it's probably more than that, that have homosexuality as a natural act within the species. I just think of, me personally, I see it as it's just simple expression of diversity in the animal kingdom. And why would you want to suppress diversity? Why should all the flowers be white or pink or, you know what I mean? The diversity is good. There's all, and besides, you know, I have to believe that the LGBTI community are some of the most creative people on the planet throughout history. Some of the greatest art and music and inventions and discoveries have been made by sexual minorities. So let's not discriminate against them.
Keep going. Why should somebody who is not gay, who is straight, care about gay rights? I mean, you just gave an answer that is legitimate, but it doesn't, you know, it's very theoretical. What effect does it have upon people who, just in their everyday life, how does it affect them?
Well, we can't control who's going to be born gay, right? That's something that happens naturally. So if there's a culture that allows for diversity, then you won't have to worry about your child being beaten up or killed or hung on a fence or raped or executed for being gay. I mean, just on a real practical level, you don't want to set up any group to be a target for hostility, because your child might be a part of that group, even if you're not. Is that more down to earth?
Yeah, I think that is. Keep going.
Yeah.
You know, there ought to be, if you can't reel them off and you're an advocate, there ought to be a list. There ought to be a list of dozens of reasons why people who are not gay should defend gay rights. Don't you think so?
I absolutely agree.
So where is it? All right, you got your homework. First, you got to find out the percentage of the population who are intersex. Is that the word? The I's and the LGBTI?
Correct.
And then you've got to find that list. I mean, it just seems like, you know, you're off to a good start.
I think my friend John Mortimer right now is just hitting a fuse because he sent me all these talking points and they're out of my brain right now.
Oh, John Mortimer's your friend, eh?
Oh,
I remember John Mortimer.
He gives me the plain speak. These are the talking points. Stick to the talking points. Nah, he's a good guy. He's a good guy. And Dark Lady, too, I have to thank her, too, for making this connection happen with the Advocate. She's one of our writers. One of her articles on what happened in Vermont made it in the top 50 today.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so she was excited about that. And we all Twitter each other about this stuff.
And what's the word? Pardon me?
You find that? Do you follow Twitters?
I didn't know you were on Twitter. Are you?